savoring the warmth on my wet skin for a few moments before meeting his gaze. A cast of Sealy came to me this morning with their problems. If I keep the true magic, I am their ruler. I would be required to hear their petitions, deal with their politics, protect them, guide them. I added with my eyes, it would be time-consuming, and if I were to truly rule and truly care, it would, in time, take me over. I don't want that future. When this is over, I want to... I trailed off.
What?
Play in the sun. Love people. Run with your beast. Explore worlds. Live. Cruz was motionless, watching me intensely. Were he human, he'd be holding his breath. Oh, yes, he hungered to lead his people. And despite the things he'd done to me, I couldn't say he wouldn't be a fine leader for them. No doubt as fine or better than me. If I can't figure out how to use this power, I said aloud, it won't matter if we recreate the song. I won't be able to sing it, or wield it, or whatever I'm supposed to do with it.
He doesn't have you over a barrel, Mac.
Raiden pointed out.
If we die, he does too. That's powerful enough motivation for him to cave before it's too late. He's Fae. He'll never willingly embrace death. Not so long as there's the slightest chance of his survival.
Raiden was right. We could hold out. But for what purpose, what gain? I'm okay with it, provided the compact is clearly detailed. And maybe, once I'd figured out how to restore Cruz's wings, I could heal a human heart for Danny before I gave such a stunning amount of power away. Barons inclined his head.
If this is what you want.
I took a final brief moment to reflect, to be absolutely certain, no regrets. The power inside me was brilliant, generous, warm. It could do so many amazing things for so many people. With it, I might be able to shape the icy immortals into a kinder bunch of beings. But I didn't want to take on that challenge. I knew who and what I'd become. I was a woman that couldn't do anything halfway. In time, the weight and responsibility of the fairy crown would take over my mind and heart and change me in ways I didn't want to be changed. I said, let's go get my dad and draw up a compact. What guarantee do we have that Cruz will honor it? Jada demanded. He claims we're both irrevocably bound by it, and once I access the true magic, I'll have confirmation of that. It's a win-win. If he's telling me the truth, great. If he's lying, that means neither of us are bound, and with full access to the Queen's power, I'll be far more powerful than he is. In which case, I turned to Cruz and said with a cool smile, I will terminate your existence instantly, without a second thought. He inclined his head.
Fair enough. And once you realize I am not lying, and you have completed the transfer of the true magic to me, I will still accept you as my consort, Michaela. You alone. I have given far more truths than lies. You alone speak to the finest of all that I am.
Deep in his chest, Barons began to rattle again. 46. Listen to the music of the night. Mac. I left Barons, Raiden, and Cruz drawing up the compact with my daddy after having established the concessions I felt mandatory. Contracts aren't my strong suit. Fortunately, they are Raiden's. As soon as it was completed, Barons would text me and we'd meet at the bookstore, where Cruz would teach me how to use the Queen's power, and I would restore his wings. My sister, independent woman that she was, had left the house shortly after I had, heading to Trinity College to inspect the music box I'd told her about. I was on my way there to meet up with her, anxious to know if she could hear the same song coming from it that I did. Jada had remained at Chester's with Christian, to assist in his efforts, employing the same druid arts he'd used to remove the soil from my sister's grave to eradicate the earth from beneath the black holes. If he was successful, he had concerns about not being able to keep it from being sucked straight up into the hole once he began breaking it apart. He would sift to Scotland and bring back all the Kelter, dispatching them to the larger spheres to get to work, Still, we were only buying time. According to Jada, now that the ergospheres were manifesting, the holes would have an increasingly destabilizing effect on the environment and grow even faster. Although I'd told Cruz that my race could be moved to another world and survive, I felt an undeniable, and rather confusing to a she-seer, obligation to save the two-a-day Donna from extinction. I wondered why they would cease to exist if the Earth did, then recalled the Queen saying it was because she'd bound the seat of their power to our planet. A light bulb went off in my head, and I drew up short in the middle of the street, stunned. If the power was in our planet, then it seemed logical it was this planet I had to tap into in order to make the true magic work. Was that the missing ingredient? I closed my eyes, sought the true magic, and envisioned it shooting tendrils from my feet into the soil, extending taproots, feathering out and expanding. Oh, God, I could feel the world. I was part of it, and it was warm and breathing, bubbling and shifting, alive, and so very sick. Tears stung the backs of my eyes. Earth was dying. This was what the Queen had always been able to feel, the fabric of everything, oceans and beaches, mountains and deserts, where it met in harmony, where it was torn and wounded. It was overwhelming, and tears rolled down my cheeks from the sheer beauty and sorrow of it. Her assessment had been accurate. We were nearly out of time. The spheres were more than mere holes in the fabric of our world. They were a cancerous presence, changing matter even in areas they didn't touch, corroding, eroding the very essence of the weft and weave of reality with their terrible song. I was right. The holes emanated a song of unmaking, the same hellish music I'd heard during my brief stay at Chester's, trickling up through the ventilation shafts from the black hole deep below, invading my mind even as I'd slept. Chills suffused me, and for a moment I felt the terrible song touch me, threatening, as Alina had said, to tear me apart at the seams. I thrust it away, willed a barrier between us. My newfound ability to feel this world was dangerous. I was connected to all, even the poisoned parts. I had to protect myself. I pictured the abbey, the fountain on the front lawn. When I opened my eyes, I was there, the wind carrying a soft fall of fountain spray into my face. It was that easy. I finally understood why the Fae were able to influence the climate and plant life. They were each connected to the planet to varying degrees, drawing power from its core according to the abilities of their caste. I could sift. I could freaking sift. That was one power I was going to miss when I transferred the true magic to Cruz. At the front entrance, half a dozen she-seers were clustered around Enyo, talking and taking a brief break. As I approached, Enyo glanced up and stopped speaking mid-sentence. Her brows drew together in a scowl, her gaze moving from my eyes to my hair and back to my eyes again, and her mouth shaping a silent, "What the fuck?" The other she-seers greeted me with equally shocked expressions, their eyes the mirror that told me my transformation was becoming more apparent with each passing hour. I said quickly, "The Fairy Queen transferred her magic to me so we might save this world. Clear the workers out of the abbey. I think I can rebuild it." Enyo's brows reversed their path and climbed her forehead. "Are you bloody kidding me? Why would the Fairy Queen..." I cut her off. "Because she learned who she'd once been and no longer wanted to lead. Enyo, it's a complicated story, and we don't have time for it. The planet is dying faster than we thought. Get the workers out of the ruins. I need practice, and you need the abbey back." She studied me a long moment, then shrugged and began to bark orders. The moment the rubble was unoccupied, I had concerns about potentially putting a wall where a person stood, I tapped into the immense, bubbling power beneath my feet. This time I kept my eyes open. Cruz never closed his when he was using Fey magic. I wed the power within me to the soil, sinking deeper than before, and gasped. The earth possessed some kind of awareness. Gaia, in all her totality, was a living thing with some kind of vast, incomprehensible consciousness. It knew what had once sat here, at every point in time. I might just as easily have urged it to restore the church that had once stood on these grounds, or gone back further and commanded it to let the ancient Sheehan rise. So that was why the Fae seed of power was embedded in the occupied planet. Worlds had long memories, and time wasn't at all the same thing to a planet as it was to a human. Restore the Abbey. I invited the powerful twining of forces. As I watched the sprawling fortress attain insubstantial shape before my eyes, I was struck by a sudden thought. Just how powerful was I now? Might I restore Joe, too? The translucent shape of the Abbey vanished. Dimly, I heard dismayed cries from she-seers and knew they, too, had seen it beginning to form, then disappear. I smiled sadly. Of course I couldn't. Or even if I could, I'd be no better than the she-sadu or the Unseelie King himself. I had no doubt I could use the power for personal reasons, like, say, sifting to a sunny beach to enjoy a few hours in the sun. But I had to work with nature, not against it. Death wasn't mine to undo. It made sense to me on a soul level, reminding me with a twinge of unease how wrong it seemed that I'd gotten Alina back. I pushed the troubling thought from my mind and refocused my efforts on the Abbey. And when I sifted out a few minutes later, to the sound of deafening cheers, the mighty fortress had never looked finer. I materialized in the physics lab at Trinity College with the left half of my body inside a wall, gasped, sifted instantly to the right, and glanced hastily back at the offending structure, afraid I was going to see one of my arms sticking out of it. The wall was intact. So was I. I shuddered. That was horrifying. As if part of my body had been neatly displaced and I had no idea where it was until it was abruptly back again. Maybe Faye didn't mind the feeling of being amputated by inanimate objects, but I did. Perhaps I'd stop sifting until I talked to Cruz and got a better handle on the mechanics. Or aim for wide-open places, like Christian.
Holy hell! What did that feel like?
Dancer exclaimed excitedly, leaping to his feet.
Your bloody molecules must have been displaced. The wall couldn't possibly hold the combined mass. Where did the excess parts go? Do you know? Can you explain it to me?
Beyond wrong, and I have no idea, I said as I joined them. Dancer was standing in the middle of a U-shaped desk with a portable keyboard on one side and computers of various shapes and sizes on every other available inch of it. Alina was sprawled in a chair next to it, and for a moment, I just basked in seeing my sister here with me in Dublin alive. She grinned, checking me out from head to toe. The grin turned to a smirk, and she said, "Hey, Junior, looked in a mirror lately?" "Pretty sure I don't want to," I said wryly. "Did you listen to the music box?" She sobered instantly. "Yes, it's horrific. Seriously, worst music ever. I'm not sure you can even call it music." "Worse than the song you hear coming from the black holes?" She considered a moment, then said, "No, it's more like the song I hear from the different Unseelie casts. There's something wrong with it." "Why am I the only one that hears a beautiful song?" I said irritably. Dancer shrugged.
"No idea. I'm still working on converting it to numbers. Here, let me play part of it for you, and we'll see if it sounds as bad on my keyboard as it does coming from the box. Maybe there's something about the box itself that distorts it for us."
He dropped back into his chair, turned around and powered up the keyboard, then, glancing over his shoulder, reading lines of music off the computer, began to play. "Oh, stop!" I shouted, hastily covering my ears. "That's not the song I hear. That's awful. You must have written it down wrong."
"Those are the exact notes,"
Dancer protested.
"I converted them to numbers starting at C."
"Well, you did it wrong somehow. Maybe you started at a different note than you thought you did." He gave me a blank look.
I don't do things wrong, Mac. I played exactly what the music box plays.
He glanced at Alina for confirmation, and she nodded. I said, All I know is that's not the melody I hear. This is what I hear. I began to hum softly. Alina said, But that's not what we hear at all, Junior. Dancer waved a hand at her, shushing her, his eyes suddenly intensely bright.
Nobody talk. Hum, Mac. Just keep humming.
I hummed, and hummed, and hummed some more. While he sat, eyes growing more and more unfocused, listening, nodding, finally grinning broadly.
I'll be damned.
He spun back to his computer.
I hear patterns. I see them, too. It's one of the quirks of my brain. Everything has structure. Even social interactions. Sometimes it's hard not to get lost in them. Sometimes.
He said as he typed away.
I get so distracted, designing mathematical constructs out of social situations, that I forget I'm actually involved in them.
He fell silent then, and typed for several minutes, hummed a few notes, typed some more, then pushed away from the computer and beamed up at me.
I know what's wrong with you,
he announced excitedly. Let me have it, I said warily.
You're hearing the song inverted. Perfectly inverted. Every bloody layer of it. Unreal. And you aren't even intelligent enough to understand how fantastically improbable that is. Do you have Asperger's?
He demanded.
What other unusual things does your brain do?
He narrowed his eyes, peering at me as if I was a fascinating specimen he'd like to slap on a slide and push beneath a microscope. Inverted, explain.
I knew as soon as you began humming that it was essentially the same thing, but not. Inversion is the rearrangement of the top-to-bottom elements in an interval, chord, or melody. In simpler terms, you're hearing the music the box plays with every last bit of it flipped.
He made a rotating gesture with his hands.
Perfectly flipped? Oh, that's impossible. People don't hear music perfectly inverted.
Play it the way I hear it on the keyboard.
Give me a sec.
He went back to work on his computer, inverting what he'd converted to numbers earlier. When he was done, he opened a program, exported the data, punched a few more buttons, and music began to play through the computer speakers. I was instantly transported to a state of bliss. This time, I was happy to note, I wasn't the only one. It ended much too soon and left the three of us shaking our heads and looking slightly lost.
That,
Dancer said, in a low, stunned voice,
was the most extraordinary arrangement of frequencies I've ever heard.
Alina agreed, looking slightly dazed. I demanded, Is it the song? Dancer snorted.
You're asking me that? How would I know? You're the bloody queen who's supposed to do something with it. Is it?
I think it has to be. But that doesn't make any sense. The king was never able to complete it. We know that for a fact. Or he would have turned the concubine fey, and he didn't. And he gave the music box to the concubine long before she supposedly killed herself. Then it can't be the song, Alina said. Maybe it's part of the song, and he was never able to figure out the rest, I proposed. Dancer raked both his hands through his hair, looking as if he was on the verge of tearing it out.
Bloody hell! You'd better hope not. Do you know how impossible it is to finish someone else's symphony? Completely. Look at all the brilliant minds that worked on Mahler's 10th. None of the versions ever sounded right to me. I got so frustrated listening to them that I actually took a few stabs at it myself. I did no better. Impossible to precisely duplicate another's creative vision.
But if this particular song is made of frequency that affects matter, which I'm sure you can devise some way to test, wouldn't even part of the song give you insight into what frequencies can affect the matter of the black holes? And you could extrapolate from there?
Sure,
Dancer said exasperatedly.
If I had a few centuries to work on it and countless perfectly contained black holes to test my theories on.
I sighed, pressing my fingers to my temples, thinking hard. I know there's something to it. I don't know how I know it, but I do. Just convert it all and invert it, and let's try playing it to one of the smaller black holes, okay? He shrugged.
It's worth a try. It's not like we have much else to go on.
He spun back around in his chair and began typing. After about 3 seconds, he tossed over his shoulder.
Leave. You're disturbing my brain space.
With a snort of laughter, I held out my hand to Alina and took my first stab at sifting tandem. 47. Mea culpa. Mac. I banged into the bookstore a short time later with Alina on my heels, both of us holding our faces and muttering beneath our breath. My first tandem sift had not gone well. The compact negotiating crew had arrived and was waiting for us. My dad was on the Chesterfield on the middle cushion, his arms spread along the back. Barons and Riordan were in their usual corners, while Cruz leaned lightly against the mantle of the fireplace. Barons surged to his feet in a ripple of muscle and aggression the moment he saw me.
Who the bloody hell gave you a black eye?
He growled. That would be you, I said with mock sweetness, pressing a hand to my bruised cheekbone. And your bloody wards? It felt like slamming into a brick wall. Fortunately, I healed quickly. Unfortunately, my sister didn't. The corners of his mouth twitched. Then he gave up the ghost and just flashed me one of those rare, full-on smiles that always made me catch my breath and stare. He's so damn beautiful, and his smiles are sunshine in a black velvet sky, improbable and stunning.
You sifted. You figured out how to use it,
he murmured.
Without Cruz.
And rebuilt the abbey, I told him proudly. It's never looked better.
You will sign the compact and restore my wings,
Cruz growled. I intend to. I wasn't signing it merely to figure out how to use the true magic. I wanted full, unstinting access to Cruz's wealth of information and knowledge. I wanted to know if he'd ever caught even the remotest whisper that the king might have come close to recreating the song. I wanted to play the music box for him, pick his brain for days. I stood motionless, feeling the lovely, wounded earth beneath me, and invited it to restore his torn wings. Cruz inhaled sharply, stretched to his full, enormous height, tossed his head back, and pushed away from the fireplace.
Ah,
he purred.
Yes, that is what I was missing.
He closed his eyes a moment, adjusting and resettling his massive, velvety wings. Then he opened his eyes and glared daggers at me.
Sign the compact. Now.
Ignoring him for the moment, I moved to the small fridge behind the counter, retrieved one of the many ice packs I had from my early days in Dublin when I kept getting beat up all the time, and gave it to my sister. She pressed it lightly to her eye and sank down on the sofa next to Daddy. Hey, Daddy, I said, and kissed him on top of his head, beaming. The only people missing were Danny and Mom, and my family would be complete.
Hi, baby.
He smiled up at me.
It's finished. That is, if you still want to sign it.
I slid over the back of the Chesterfield and dropped down on the other side of him, opposite Alina. He draped his arms around both our shoulders. I do. I took the packet he was offering me, flipped through it, and laughed. Our compact was 52 pages long. Looks like you covered it all, with lengthy codicils for virtually every possibility. Jack Lane looked at me carefully.
Are you certain you want to sign this, honey? I agree with your mother. You'd make a fine queen.
I couldn't wait to sign it. I stretched my hand out behind me in the general direction of Barron's. Can I have one of your knives? He was always carrying. I nearly pulled my spear from my holster before remembering how much I never wanted to poke myself with that thing. Then Barons's mouth was on my wrist. I felt the touch of his tongue, the sting of fangs. A kiss, and his mouth was gone. He had to do it 5 more times, because I kept healing so quickly. But finally, with an ancient quill Barons had produced, the compact was signed by one Michaela Evelina Lane, Queen of the Fae. Cross-signed by Cruz, then signed secondarily in sharp, dramatic script that shimmered even when dried, with a name that defied translation into any language known to man. It was formally witnessed by Jack Lane, Barons, Riordan, and Alina Lane.
"There must be an exchange of precious metals, imbued with power,"
Cruz said.
"I will accept the bracelet you had the other night." "No,"
Riordan said. He shot me a look that said,
"If he wants it, it's important. Then it is not binding,"
Cruz said flatly.
"I have not demanded the amulet, which I know you have and should be mine. That is my offering of precious metals. You may keep it, a gift from the Fey race."
Barons looked at me.
"I have other objects of power to offer."
I narrowed my eyes and glanced back at Cruz. "You may have one of the lesser three amulets."
"Only for the bracelet will I agree to this pact. And his demands just keep growing,"
Riordan mocked.
"No surprise there."
I met Cruz's dark, turbulent gaze and was shocked to hear clearly in my head,
"I do not seek to take anything from you that you would ever desire to use, Michaela. It is important only to me."
His words carried the knell of truth, resonated clearly and simply inside me. But then, he was the great deceiver. Regardless, it was a bracelet I had no idea how to use. And if we were successful, the Fae would soon be gone from our world forever. That made it another item that didn't signify. After a moment, over the protests of others, I went upstairs, got the bracelet, and gave it to him. It was done. Once we saved our world, I would transfer the weight of mantle and scepter to someone else. The Fae would be gone. Life would be incredibly normal. And I would finally be just Mac again. Hours later, I sat on the Chesterfield, gaze unfocused, doing the equivalent of reading Fae files on ancient history. After confirming that the key to using my power lay in forging a connection to the planet itself, Cruz had also told me that new queens required anywhere from 50 to 500 years to grow into their power, due to the sheer enormity of information transferred. Yeah, so not sticking around for that job curve. If there was a way to instantly internalize it all, no queen had ever found it. A large part of my new lofty position was little more than file clerk. If I focused on, say, Song of Macon, every single one of the 9,722,342 records, legends, myths, and songs about it swam up in my mind with the equivalent of tabs and a filing system that made no bloody sense to me because I knew nothing about Fae history. The information had been logged under the name of the Fae that most largely signified in that bit of information. To any other queen, those names might have been recognizable, and she could have immediately sought the most credible ones. They meant nothing to me. I'd spent hours blurting names while Cruz had either shaken his head to pass or inclined it to indicate I should continue to read, with Barons watching, scowling darkly. Imagine having access to 1,000,000 years of human history, every myth, legend, or factual, yet biased, news clipping. Imagine having the internet inside you, becoming a walk-in Google search engine. It felt exactly like that. I'd become a human computer. It was one more reason I was enormously grateful Cruz would be taken over. By the time he left, I'd begun to seriously question both the Queen's decision to give me the true magic and the sanity of the one on the planet who deemed me a worthy choice. Barons departed shortly after Cruz. Christian's efforts to remove soil from beneath the spheres had proved successful, but time-consuming. He'd retrieved the other Kelter druids from Scotland, and Barons and Riordan were assisting, using small bobcats to push soil far from the danger zone of the most immediately threatening black holes. I sat on the couch, rubbing my temples, fighting a headache, thinking how ridiculously difficult the Queen's job was. It was no wonder they got so bitchy and ruthless. Power was a crushing weight. Then again, Fae queens didn't get headaches. They felt no pain at all. And as far as I knew, suffered no physical demands. No need for sleep or food. Frowning, I sank inward and accessed the elixir of life. Not for myself, but for Dancer. I'd already tried hunting for topics like healing humans, which hadn't yielded a single tab. No surprise there. Why would a fae care to, A, heal a human, B, make any files about it if they did? That was yet another limit to all this bloody information I had. Some things were common knowledge to fae, so they didn't bother recording it. Why would I make a file on how to brush my teeth or dry my hair? It wasn't long before I sighed and shook my head. The potion of immortality had been, as many fae things were, stolen from some other race an eternity ago. It wasn't capable of healing. It dramatically transformed any being that consumed it, and it carried a high price. Barrenness, and in time, it eradicated every vestige of the immortal soul if you believed in such things. And I did. When a fae died, there was no afterlife. At best, they drifted, their essence scattered to the molecules of the world on which they died. At worst, they were simply gone, as if they'd never been. I was fascinated to discover the fae believed humans were reincarnated again and again with many different lives eternally. But a dead fae could never have its essence scraped back together to become something else. I wondered what made the fae decide a nearly immortal existence, without children or pain, but very little pleasure either, was worth it. Suddenly apprehending them not as a vastly more powerful race, but cowards. I'd rather roll the dice, play the lottery, enjoy an unpredictable and sometimes scary eternity of passion and pain than the fate they'd chosen to embrace. Regardless, the elixir was not the answer for Dancer. The bell above my door tinkled as it opened and closed. My head lifted, and my heart sank. Laura stalked into the bookstore, an enormous blonde Viking dressed in black leather pants, boots, and a Woodstock tee that looked like it might actually be an original.
Hey, Mac.
Barons isn't here, I said hastily. He sliced his head to the left.
Not looking for him. I came to see you.
Well, shit. He was pretty much the last person I wanted to see. I couldn't look at him without my box that contained thoughts of Joe threatening to explode. When he dropped onto the couch, the frame protested the impact of his weight. Lore, like the rest of the nine, stood well over 6 feet and was massively muscled and badly scarred. With thick blonde hair and chiseled good looks, he was the fun-loving caveman. The hardcore rock-and-roll partier that burned through bombshell blondes, yet somehow managed to leave them in an adoring stupor when he moved on. He had a soft spot for women and children, and had been Danny's shadow for years, without her ever knowing it. I'd sent Joe to him. After she broke up with Ryden, I'd taken one look into her red-rimmed, wounded eyes, and known instantly that she was never going to be able to toe that line. One way or another, if she didn't move forward to the next thing, she'd end up trying to go back. And Ryden would never take her back. Only thing worse than dumping a boyfriend you deep down wanted to keep, but shouldn't for one reason or another, was backsliding and getting dumped yourself. I did that once. Choosing to leave had made me feel empowered. Going back and getting rejected had screwed with my head for quite a while. Once you walked away, you had to keep walking and never look back. My brain had put two facts together that day at the bar. Fun-loving Lore, who never had relationships and allegedly was a mind-blowing, enthusiastic fuck, and Joe, needing a distraction to keep her from backsliding. It had seemed like a perfect solution. Harmless, with potential for good. Lore gets his world rocked, Joe moves on. No way they'd ever repeat it. Lore didn't do do-overs. I'd never once thought it would turn out to be anything more for Joe than a stepping stone to a new life. But they'd sparked off each other. I'd seen it. There had been something building. And I'd killed her. What's up? I said briskly. I was just about to head out. I lied.
Hear about Joe?
I nodded, cleared my throat. I'm so sorry, Lore. In more ways than he knew.
I had plans for that one.
He murmured.
Ah, did I ever. Crazy bitch. Thought she didn't want to fuck me. And anybody could see plain as day she loved fucking me.
Yep. Twist that knife. He stared at me a long, unreadable moment. Finally, he said,
I can't talk to those fucks about her. Can't talk to anybody. Figured you'd listen, 'cause you were friends with her. Hell, you're the one sent the little Spitfire to me.
And I was endlessly sorry I had.
I got a rule, see? Never fuck a brunette. Know why?
Nope, but I could see he was gonna tell me. I shook my head, not trusting myself to speak. All I could see was me shattering Joe's skull, eating her. I thrust the images away. There was danger here. The Nine were far too capable of skimming minds.
I had a wife once. Long time ago.
Let me guess. She was a brunette. You know, I said quickly, I'm not supposed to know about any of this, remember? What would Riordan do if he heard you were talking to me?
Fuck Riordan. Bastard had her longer than I did.
His face darkened, and all trace of playful, caveman lore vanished, leaving the hard, plain visage of a virtual stranger. I realized I was seeing the real lore for the first time. Brutal, cold, every bit as much a beast as the rest of them. Bone crusher. The word floated into my mind, but I had no idea why.
You got any fucking clue what it's like to outlive everyone? At first you think it's the greatest goddamn party you could have been invited to. You fuck and feast and do every goddamn thing you want and think you got the world by the balls. Then you realize every bloody person you like hanging with is gonna die. You know how many musicians I watched go before they even hit 30? And the women, shit, how many times can you care? How long till you start to hate, despise, motherfucking revile?
His eyes bored into mine, and I inhaled shallowly. A series of disjointed images flashed through my mind, and I knew he was feeding them to me. Once, Lore had been a completely different man. The worst of them. The Bone Crusher. He'd befriended Genghis Khan and run with the Mongols. He'd warred with Attila the Hun, slaughtered with Caligula, rampaged with Nero, laughed with Ivan the Terrible, been executioner for Robespierre, drank blood from the skulls of their enemies with Vlad the Impaler. For 1,000 years he'd sought war after war, killing endlessly. He'd abjured his own clan, until one night they'd shown up in force, led by Riordan, captured him, and dragged him away.
You fucks would call it an intervention,
he said with cold, dead eyes. You loved Joe, I whispered.
Nope,
he said succinctly.
But the woman made me sort of start to feel like maybe I would put up with that shit again. Watch her grow old, die, deal with it. And now she's fucking gone.
Of all the people I could have killed, it had to be Joe. Why are you telling me this?
She's already been forgotten. So much going on. Nobody's even talking about her anymore. By the time we got back, she'd been dead for over a month. I just heard. The scraps of her body got dumped in a grave. Gonna go dig 'em up. Sniff out the unseelie that did it. Torture that fuck to death 100 different ways.
A chill went up my spine. You could do that? Smell who killed her from her remains?
Oh, yeah. That's easy shit. I dropped by to let you know. Seeing as you're Fae Queen and all, letting you know there's gonna be a fuck lot of unseelie dying tonight. Not just the one that did it. I'm gonna take down the whole cast. Every goddamn last one.
I swallowed. And you came for my blessing? He got to his feet and stopped for the door, tossing over his shoulder.
Nope. Telling you to stay the fuck out of my way tonight. I'll take your ass down, too, if you get in it.
The door banged shut behind him. I sat unmoving for a moment, allowing myself to wallow in shame and grief and regret and pain, meeting it measure for measure. Then, I stepped away from crush and emotion and played out scenarios, isolating the likely one. Lore finds Joe's remains, smells that I killed her, kills me. The song can never be sung. The earth gets destroyed. All because I killed Joe. Therens had once killed a fae princess. No doubt Lore could kill a queen, especially a new young one. He was going to have to wait to kill me until after we saved the world. It occurred to me, as I pulled out my cell phone, that my decision might seem every bit as cold and ruthless to the casual observer as the things Therens and Raiden often did. Covering my ass. Deceitful, even. My fingers flew over the letters. Lore's on his way to dig up Joe's grave to sniff out the identity of her killer. He's the bone crusher again. The reply from Therens was instantaneous.
I'll take care of it.
48. It was always summer, and the future called. Jada. I dropped out of the slipstream and blasted in the door of that physics building, shoving damp hair from my face, aware that I looked the same way I felt, not in control. But there wasn't enough time to do everything I wanted, and something had to give. Since it took forever to dry and straighten my hair, I'd often skipped showers for days. But I'd had to take one today, and wasn't in the mood to waste time, so my hair was a mass of tangled curls, just like the old days, minus slippery guts. Tucked into a few. Mac, becoming the Fae Queen, had put a temporary courtesy damper on my killing sprees. All my emotions were on the surface, and I couldn't kill anything. It was a recipe for disaster. When I'd left Dancer earlier, telling him I was going to the Abbey, I was sidetracked by Mac's call and ended up spending the day with Christian, getting drenched, then muddy. Although he was able to move the earth out from beneath the black holes, the one at Chester's was especially challenging, as close as it hung to the ground. He'd had to gently loosen a half-inch of compacted soil at a time, without disturbing it so much the hole sucked it up. I'd alternated between seeping water beneath the sphere with a hose to keep the ground wet, and sprawling on my stomach, using a rake I'd modified with a super long handle to delicately ease the loosened mud free. Being so close to the hole had been intensely disconcerting. I didn't hear music coming from it like Mac, but I'd been acutely aware of instant death hovering just above my shoulders the entire time. I'd plastered my hair with mud to weigh it down and flattened myself pancake thin to the ground, but it wasn't as easy as it used to be at 14. Boobs were sometimes a serious pain in the ass. We'd lost some of the soil to the hole. It was inevitable. But when we'd left it, the sphere hung a full 10 feet from the vast creature beneath it. Christian had been four square against me raking, but it required strength to resist the gravitational pull of the ergosphere up close, and since we had so many blasted holes to work on, he'd finally accepted that everyone with the right amount of muscle was necessary, including me. It had taken us all day to dig it out to our satisfaction. During a brief break, he'd sifted me out to the Abbey. A power I'd heard Mac now had too. I was floored to discover she'd effortlessly rebuilt the fortress. She's starting to make the Nine look like not-so-superheroes to me. I want to be Mac when I grow up. Then again, maybe not. I'd heard the Fae had already begun to seek her out with their problems, and I've got enough of my own. I'd hit an old hidey hole and showered once I returned to Dublin, then headed with expeditious velocity for Trinity. I'd been getting a slew of excited texts from Dancer all afternoon. Dancer. One day, kid, Raiden had said to me a long time ago, you'll be willing to mortgage your fucking soul for somebody. I devoutly hoped that bastard wasn't going to prove right about everything he'd once said. I remembered battling the Hoarfrost King at the Abbey, at 14, whisking Dancer to safety, dumping him on the sidelines because he was only human. Then I'd been whisked and dumped on the sidelines and gotten a taste of how it felt. Who was I to tell Dancer not to live out loud, and in every color of the rainbow? There was a special place in hell for hypocrites, and I had no intention of ending up there. So, I decided to pretend there was nothing wrong with Dancer, to the precise degree he wanted me to pretend it. We would enter into an elaborate conspiracy of two. That was what friends did for each other when there was no other option. Everything about the situation pissed me off. I'd always thought one day we might be more than just friends. I'd been perfectly willing to take my time getting to that point. But thanks to a genetic flaw that was a treacherously ticking time bomb, coupled with the looming end of our world, there was no other way for me to see it than one day was here. I took the chance or I missed it. No guarantees. Fewer promises of tomorrow than I'd thought. Scowling, I shoved my hair from my face, then stopped to glance in one of the windows I was passing in the hallway, using my reflection to untangle the worst snarls. I realized what I was doing and made a face at myself. I didn't care what I looked like. I'd never cared. I wasn't starting now. As I was about to walk through the door of the lab, I drew up short, frowning. I had a fluttery sensation in my stomach that I used to get often when I was young, and every time I did, it shorted out my powers. Silverside, I'd finally figured out it happened when I was either feeling extremely emotional or thinking intensely about sex. Why those two things shorted me out was beyond me, but they did. At the moment, I was both. I inhaled deep, exhaled slow. Bold, ruthless, energy, action, tenacity, hunger, that was what B-R-E-A-T-H was. Once the fluttering stopped, I did what I used to do, freeze-framed into the room and spooked Dancer right out of his chair. The look on his face was priceless. He knew by me doing it that I'd made up my mind, which was exactly what I wanted him to know. People tended to waste a lot of breath on words when a simple action communicated much more succinctly. I wasn't going to cage him, and I wasn't going to let his heart be my cage either. I was going to do exactly what I used to do, what Dancer was doing. Live, now, as if there was no tomorrow. That didn't necessarily mean it was going to be easy, but I was damned well going to try. He had on faded jeans and a white tee with the words, "Holy shift! Look at the asymptote on that mother function," emblazoned on the front.
"Does this mean you're going to take me for a ride on that badass bike of yours, too?"
He flashed me that one-of-a-kind Dancer grin that always lit up his face, holding nothing back, aqua eyes brilliant, full of life. I nodded. Then I leaned in and kissed him. Not anything like I'd once kissed Riordan. I'd done that to mess with him, and it had worked, even though he tried to pretend it hadn't. It messed with me, too. I kissed Dancer with some part of myself I didn't even understand. The me that kissed Riordan I got. She was hard, powerful, had an ancient soul and a fierce heart. The me that kissed Dancer was young, innocent, and although there was a massive door between the world and her soft heart, there was a path that could be walked to it, with a key hanging by the door, engraved with a D for Danny and Dancer. Sometimes I really did feel like I had two different people inside me, even though I knew I didn't. One version of me was drawn to Dancer, and another was a moth obsessed with Riordan's flame. They evoked completely different qualities in me. I kissed Dancer soft and slow, butterfly wings against his mouth, waiting to see what he did, how it was going to go between us. He slipped his hands into my damp hair and said against my mouth,
"God, I love it when you wear your hair down, Mega. It's like you, full of fire and larger than life."
We just kind of stood there, kissing slow and talking a little. And he told me he used to think he might never get to kiss me. And he sure never thought I'd kiss him like this. and I told him I always thought he had the most incredible eyes. To which he replied, he has a lot of incredible parts, and I was welcome to check them out any time I wanted. His arms slid around me, and I shivered, because no one ever put their arms around me and held me close like he was doing. Like I really meant something to him, and he never wanted to stop touching me. Like he couldn't believe he was so lucky to get to hold me, and I was the biggest prize he ever could have won in his whole life. He backed off with the kiss, and we just kind of breathed into each other, while he gave me time to settle into the feel of his body. Arms warm and strong. Close, but not holding tight. It was hard for me to make myself stay put. I never let anybody touch me. Too personal. Too much risk involved. So it took maybe 10 minutes of just hugging and being close to really let myself go fluid, like I do when I meditate. It was the hardest kind of meditation I've ever done, because there was another person in it with me. I felt like I was made of all exposed edges, and I kept craving my walls and personal space back. But I wanted this too, and had started to think it was possible. If I never let anyone touch me, I might never be able to. That it would get easier and easier to keep everyone at arm's length, and harder to let anyone in. I think we get a window for intimacy, and it can close. I'd been Jada forever, and if Jada had sex, it would be a one-night stand, and the color of the rainbow I'd never get to know was love. Eventually, I slid my arms around his neck and, with enormous discomfort, rested my head against his shoulder, absorbing the sensation of leaning into a man. This was my dancer, the boy who'd found me as a child, racing down the street, exploding out of freeze frame with blood spattered head to toe and guts in my hair and liked me instantly. And while I'd talked a million miles a minute, spitting dudes and fecks, he'd stared at me as if I was some exotic creature from another planet and the most stunning, brilliant thing he'd ever seen. I melded our bodies together, my chest to his ribcage, my pelvis to his thighs, focusing only on his strength, refusing to think about that great, deceitful inner muscle of his. It felt good. Safe harbor, port in a storm. Something in me relaxed, a part of me that maybe never even once relaxed in my whole life. So this was why people hugged, why intimacy was desired. It was like stopping at a gas station and fueling yourself up. It was as if time stood still when you hugged, and something was made from someone else's arms around you, which hugging yourself could never replicate. I wasn't alone in life anymore. Someone was by my side, standing ground with me, ready to move forward and face things together. It was the most bizarre, uplifting sensation I'd ever known. Then we were kissing. Deep and hot and hungry, that kiss he'd promised me, the sexy 19-year-old one, and my hands were in his hair, and I started to feel dreamy and sex-obsessed, and like someone that had grown up normal and gone to school like other kids, maybe even attended a high school dance, and I was slow dancing with a boy for the first time, but he was a man, and I was definitely a woman. I could feel the hardness of him pressed against me, and I wanted to touch him and taste him and feel him inside me, and I wanted to tear myself from his arms and race out the door without ever looking back. Me, who wasn't afraid of anything, stared down any foe, fought any war, killed without hesitation, now quailed, waging a battle I'd avoided all my life. Intimacy.
Mega,
he groaned.
You're killing me. Kissing me like this. You want to get out of here?
I drew back and looked at him. My lips were swollen and sensitive and wanted to keep kissing. I felt warm and bubbly inside. Languorous, but humming with energy that wanted to go somewhere. This was such a big deal to me. I'd always promised myself it would be epic. I'd always thought it would be with a superhero, like myself. I was pretty sure Mac thought I'd already done it. Or worried that I had, anyway. But it wasn't as if I'd ever gotten to stay in one place long, and although there had been human Silverside, I had trust issues and one goal on my mind, get back home. Raiden was the first man I'd ever kissed. I was good at everything I did. I'd watched a lot of porn movies and thought a great deal about sex. I had a brilliant imagination. And hunger. I had a megaton of that. I knew when I finally did have sex, I was going to be epic. But this was the one thing I'd kept. The single big decision about the way I wanted to live my life that was entirely mine. Virginity was a door you only got to bang once. I didn't know how to take off my armor. I'd worn it too long. I didn't know how to live like other people. I was a tin man with no oil. You said you had some things to tell me, and something you wanted to show me. I evaded. He took my retreat with his customary resilience. His grin was instant, the disappointment in his eyes hastily concealed.
Mac, here is the song Inverted, Mega. It's totally different the way she hears it. And I have a video you've got to see. You're never going to bloody believe it.
Then he was sitting at his desk. The moment had passed, but I knew it would come again. Then he was playing a song for me, and it was the most incredible music I've ever heard. I don't know how long we sat there, listening to music I couldn't wrap my mega brain around, but I had a sudden thought that buoyed me. When we figured out the Song of Macon, considering it was supposed to heal things, maybe it would heal Dancer's heart. If it could heal holes in the fabric of the world, why not a simple human muscle? Stranger things had happened. I was surprised at how uncharacteristically pessimistic I'd been about his condition. But it had been so unexpected, and I'd recently suffered a traumatic loss. Combined, they'd sublimated my usual optimism and determination to rewire the world the way I wanted it to be. I was feeling so much better about everything when he finally stopped the music, got serious and pulled up a video, it took me a moment to absorb what I was seeing. A crowd of 100 or so people stood outside Chester's, shadowy yet visible, splashed yellow by the amber glow of gas lamps and red from the eerie glow of the crimson moon above. They were wild, excited, carrying weapons, wired on some drug or another. I know the look in the eyes of a stoner. There were two dead armed guards lying in the street. 10 of them went at once, just raced straight into the black hole that Christian and I had spent all day working on. They were instantly spaghettified and slurped greedily in. The others cheered and punched their fists in the air, as if they'd just done something brave and thrilling. Not something so bloody stupid I couldn't believe anyone would voluntarily do it. The world tries hard enough to kill you, and succeeds eventually. Why cooperate or rush it? My gaze flew to Dancer's. How did you get this? I demanded. He smirked.
Hacked Riordan's computers. Tapped into his surveillance cams. Still trying to get into his mainframe.
My heart sank. Riordan was one dude Dancer didn't want to be messing with. You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. Suddenly, I had an old Jim Croce song my mom used to play stuck in my head. Turn it off, I said stiffly, and stay out of his stuff. He looked at me like he couldn't believe what I was saying. He hit the pause button and said,
Mega, we always dick with Riordan. That's what we do. It's like a calling.
He mocked.
Hey, Brain, what are we going to do tonight? Gee, Pinky, take over the world and dick with Riordan. Thought you'd be impressed. You have no idea how many bloody firewalls I had hacked to get this. Don't know who's running his system, but he's got security I've never seen before. Besides,
he dangled invitingly,
you haven't seen the interesting part yet. Really want me to turn it off now?
What kind of interesting stuff? I said, eyes narrowing.
The truth about Riordan,
he said softly, watching me closely. I punched the pause button, eyes glued to the screen. That man's secrets. Irresistible. As the video continued, another small group broke off, raced in, and again the others cheered. Morons. Sheep. Bah. They repeated the study of stupendous stupidity, until there were only 10 sheep left standing in the street, bleating excitedly as if they were winning some kind of war, not